Good afternoon, America, and welcome to the Dean's List. I'm Dean Bowen. You are listening to America Out Loud Talk Radio, and we are glad you are. Thank you for being on board with us today. Thank you for just being a part of this conversation. I love hearing from you. Keep the emails coming. Keep the comments coming. The conversation is, it's one that we have to have. And sometimes, we get into the political weeds here, which is fine. I mean, I enjoy the weeds. I do. I enjoy getting into politics. It's something I like. I've always liked it, and I probably always will. But a lot of times when we, when we get into deep political discussions, here at least, it is about what ails us. It is about the despicable things that are happening on the political front. And sometimes when we talk about the despicable things that are happening on the political front, we don't really dive into solutions. And it's not that, we don't have solutions. It's because we're so busy talking about what's wrong that sometimes we just don't get to the solution portion of things. And I think today we're going to get to some solutions. Today is the day that we shine some hope on the educational landscape. So the objective of the program is twofold: to shine the light of truth on the educational landscape throughout the country, and also to shine the light of hope. They go hand in hand. I think you really, if you're going to have one, you really should have the other. Sometimes truth can be hard to swallow, and there's got to be some hope with it. The truth of the matter here is that there is an exodus taking place. There is a mass public school exodus. I don't know that you hear about it a lot. I don't know that it's covered in a lot of mainstream. I don't really call it mainstream. I don't know that the fake news talks about it, probably because it's not fake, probably because it's a reality. People, parents, families have said, hey, enough's enough. And we've documented it here. We've talked about it at length. We have just pulled up the map and just picked a place, just picked a school district and observed the high percentages of enrollment loss in just elementary schools alone. It's massive. We've talked about the increase in homeschooling. We've talked about the increase in private schools. What we haven't necessarily talked about, though, is the increase in classical Christian schools. Arcadia Education recently released a market analysis of classical school enrollment. This was through the 23-24 school year. And it's estimated, according to their analysis, that over 677,000 students spread among 1,551 schools, that these students are enrolled in a classical education. Nearly 39% of those students receive classical education by way at home learning, co-ops, or micro schools. Another 34% attend Christian evangelical classical schools. And over 18% attend classical public charter schools. And almost 9% attend a Catholic classical school. So this report, and it's quite lengthy, it dives into the surge or the rise in classical education. Why? Why a rise in classical education, you ask? What is classical education? What does it focus on? Real Clear Education, they have an article commenting on this market analysis done by Arcadia. Real Clear says that significantly more K-12 students today are receiving a classical education than just a few years ago. And this growing trend is accelerating nationwide. All right. And we know that. We see it. We know that the Association of Classical Christian Schools, they send out reports from time to time. It's an organization that we are a part of here. And they're most and all the time in their reports as of late, they're talking about this increase in classical schools, specifically classical Christian schools. So we know it's happening. We get it. The question is why? Why do you think classical Christian schools are growing in number? Real Clear Education goes on to do their best to describe a classical education. And I don't know that they describe it as much as they just throw out the words. Classical education, they say, while not easily defined, is typically structured as the trivium, with students progressing from grammar to logic to rhetoric. There's an emphasis on the great books and the cultivation of virtuous character. Students are taught to recognize and appreciate the true, the good, and the beautiful. All right, that's their synopsis. They're right, though, when they say it's not easily defined. Classical education is not easily defined. You throw out this word trivium, and people are like, what? I've never heard of, but what's a trivium? So, and again, I don't want to dive into the classical weeds here and try to describe what the trivium is. It's, and here I go, I'm about to describe it. I mean, they throw it out there. It is, the trivium is, I guess in a nutshell, it's how the education is divided. That's not a very good definition, but just for an overview, the trivium is divided into what we would refer to as elementary, middle school, high school. In a classical school, it's called grammar, logic, and rhetoric. The grammar school would correspond with elementary. The logic school corresponds with middle school, and then the rhetoric corresponds with high school. And I can get into why, I don't really want to now because I don't want this to be the point of our discussion. What I do want to be the point of our discussion is maybe to answer the question why. Why is classical schools, why are they increasing? Why are they growing in number? Why are they growing in popularity? Why all of a sudden? And I want to focus on one word that we use in classical education quite a bit, and it's a Greek word, and the word is paideia. It's PAIDEI, not that DEI, and then A. PAIDEIA, paideia. A lot of times it's translated in English as instruction, or sometimes it can be translated as correction or discipline or so there's a verse in the Bible where Solomon says in Proverbs 1:7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, but fools despise instruction. That word instruction in the Greek translation of the Old Testament, the Septuagint, the Greek used the word paideia for that word instruction. But fools despise paideia. They despise instruction. In the New Testament, Paul uses that word when he's, telling fathers to train their kids. He says, train them, raise them in the fear and admonition of the Lord, or another word is the instruction of the Lord or the teaching of the Lord. And that word is paideia. Paul uses the word paideia. Train your children in the paideia of the Lord. And so, a lot of times in English, we'll take this word and we'll translate it to mean teaching or instruction or discipline or correction. But for the Greeks, it was more than just a teaching or instructing. It was how that teaching and how that instruction were to happen, how it was to happen. And they believed this word encompassed more of a culture. It takes on a cultural meaning. It denotes that this is how instruction is going to happen. It's going to happen through the culture. Kids learn probably in a school, they probably learn as much, if not more, from the culture of the school than they do from the curriculum from of the school. And now the curriculum becomes part of the culture. I understand that, but culture becomes this overarching form of education to the Greeks. This is what, and this, Paul knew Greek. He understood it. He grew up, even though he was a Jew and a member of the Sanhedrin, and he was very well educated. He understood Greek culture. He understood his use of the word paideia when he said, fathers, raise your children in the paideia of the Lord, where we would translate that as teaching. Paul isn't just talking about teaching. He's talking about the mode and the way that it's to be taught. He's talking about raise your children in the culture of the Lord. There's a culture here, and it's the culture that does the educating. And this, my friends, is really where a classical education becomes so rich. It becomes so meaningful. And it's my opinion that this is a driving force as to why parents are looking in this direction. Why? We ask this question, why are classical schools increasing? When I look at the report, here, it's rich, it's deep. And we're gonna dive into the numbers here in just a minute, but I think to answer this question, why, is an important question, because maybe you yourself, maybe you're listening and your child is still in a public school. And maybe, the public school isn't that bad. All right. Look, I know they're out there, probably. They probably exist. They are becoming fewer and fewer, though, as we progress into this decade. Public schools are going to worsen, but there's probably still some good ones out there. And maybe your child is in one. And maybe you're thinking, though, maybe I need to get Johnny out. Maybe I need to get Susie out. Maybe I need to get my child out. And you've been thinking about this. This here, this why question becomes the impetus. And for classical schools, the why should I, as a parent, pull my child from a public school to a classical school? Or even why should I, when they get to a certain age, why should I stop homeschooling and put them into a classical school? The answer is paideia. The answer is that the culture. The culture does the teaching. Look, I know the teachers do the teaching and they teach from the curriculum, but kids learn through a culture. And that it doesn't happen in a vacuum. There is going to be a culture in any school. And the question is, who is setting the tone for that culture? For us here at Waterbrook, the leadership team, sets the tone. And we set it on purpose. We want a particular culture here. And we want it to be, as Paul said, the paideia of the Lord. We want it to be a religious culture. I mean, we don't want to just be a religious school in name only. We want the students to have a relationship with God. This really was my discussion with Don Mayer last week, when we were talking about kingdom education. And I said to Don, I don't know that I've uttered the phrase kingdom education on air before. But it's really what we want. It's what we want our culture to be. We where Jesus taught his disciples to pray, and he said, pray as it is in heaven, so have it be here on earth. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done as it is in heaven, then also as it is here on earth. So the kingdom, we want the kingdom here. the kingdom of heaven. We want it here. We want a kingdom education. This is the culture that we want. And in my opinion, this is why, parents are fleeing the public schools in droves, because they want a particular culture, whether they put it in those words or not, and that terminology. It's my opinion that that's the driving force. They'll say stuff like, "I'm tired of my son or daughter being taught this indoctrination." Well, what is the indoctrination? It's a culture. It's a literally a culture of indoctrination. There is a culture that's taking over many public schools. And it's not a culture of tolerance. It's a culture of intolerance. It's not a culture of love. It's a culture of hatred. It's a culture of diversity. It's a culture of racism. Critical race theory and diversity, equity, and inclusion create racism. They create division. They create hatred. They're founded on lies. This is a culture. It's a culture that's being created, and it's being created on purpose. It's not happening just by circumstance. It's not just happening by, oh, this is just the way it's going. This is the way, culture is moving. It's happening on purpose. There are people orchestrating and spearheading this movement, and it's been going on for decades. It's been happening, for decades, and whether it's centrally planned or it's loosely planned, nonetheless, it's planned, and it's been planned for quite some time. And this parents want something different. Parents are looking for a different culture. They're looking for a different environment in which their children can grow up to be good people, to be good citizens, to be people with some level of morality. Did you see that there's this clip going around from Joe Rogan? And matter of fact, when we come out of this break, I'm going to play it for you in case you missed it. I mean, you've probably seen it. It's on the internet. This recent clip where Joe Rogan's talking about this very thing. And it's interesting to hear it come from him, because he's a powerful voice. He's a powerful influence. So I would like to dive into that on the other side of the break. We're up against it. You're listening to The Dean's List on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Take action today. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutLoud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
You've all heard Dr. McCullough and others share over and over the value of keeping your sinuses cleansed. It's a smart move all year, but even more so when we're cooped up inside. It's not really open for debate any longer. Those that live smart and live well pay attention to nasal and oral hygiene. Cofix RX has just the tools for the job with our nasal and throat cleanse. Click the Cofix RX banner on AmericaOutLoud.shop to get 20% off your entire order. That's right, AmericaOutLoud.shop. Use coupon code OUTLOUD. That's coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off your entire order.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
ASEA believes that inside each of us is the potential to feel our very best. Our redox-based products tap into reserves within you to power your personal well-being. Make our breakthrough products an essential step in fulfilling your greatest potential. ASEA, we power potential. For exclusive savings, use code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your first order today.
Welcome back to The Dean's List. I'm Dean Bowen. Thank you for listening to America Out Loud Talk Radio. We are happy to have you on board. You can find us here Monday through Friday at the 2 p.m. Eastern time slot, and we are happy that you are listening. We're talking about the rise in classical education today. And we, for weeks now, we've been documenting the exodus that's taking place in public schools. What we haven't necessarily talked about is the rise in classical Christian schools. And in this movement is growing. We touched on it a little bit last week when I had Don Mayer on. Don is a former Christian school principal out of Bethel Christian in Redding, California. I think he was principal there for 20, 25 years. And Don talks about a kingdom education. Now, they weren't necessarily a classical school per se, but his he talks about kingdom education in terms of the kingdom of God becoming part of education. That it becomes the driving force in education, and it's in my opinion, it's what the classical schools refer to when they use the Greek word paideia. And I am saying that the why for the growth of classical Christian schools has to do with paideia. Paideia is translated In English language, much as instruction, as correction, as teaching or discipline. But to the Greeks, it was more than just teaching. It was a mode of teaching. The Greeks believed it was the culture that did the teaching. Paideia becomes the culture of a thing. And many kids, that's how they learn. They learn through the culture of a thing. And so where Paul said to fathers in Ephesians, you know, raise your children in the paideia of the Lord, he's talking about not just, you know, biblical instruction, not that they had the Bible then, but, you know, you get my point. He's talking about a culture, you know, raise them in the culture of the Lord. And this is what Don Mayer and I were talking about last week in terms of kingdom education. There's a culture here. There's a culture involved. And it's my opinion and my belief that this is really what parents are looking for as they flee public schools. And as classical schools continue to grow and continue to be on the rise, what I don't know that parents are putting this terminology to their thoughts, but it's paideia. They're looking for a different environment for their kids in which to grow up, in which to prosper, in which to thrive. They're looking for a different culture. Because culture does the instructing. I don't know if you've ever read any of the Brave books. If you haven't, look into them. They're fantastic. I'm looking at a pile of them right now. You can subscribe and they'll get, if you go to Brave, I don't know, brave.com probably. I mean, go to Brave Books. If you Google Brave Books and you get on their subscription, they will send you a Brave book every month. And they're fantastic. The books are fantastic, and they're written for children. You know, they're kind of cartoonish, and they tell a really good story. In the beginning books, they come in series, and in the beginning, the villain is a vulture, and his name is Culture. Culture, the vulture, because Culture is the bad guy. The Greeks would say, you know, culture is neither good nor bad. Culture is a mode of teaching. It's a mode of instruction. But culture can go good or bad depending on who is steering it. It's not necessarily culture itself that is evil or good, but it's the people steering it. They are the ones that are good or evil. And this, in my opinion, this is what parents, without actually, you know, maybe putting these words to it, this is what they want. This is what they're looking for. Listen to Joe Rogan's take on it. It is, it's something else because Joe Rogan is a powerful, booming voice. And when he starts talking about this sort of thing, then you know people are listening. So let's take a listen ourselves.
Unfortunately, the problem with living in a secular society and living in a society that has a lot of people that are atheists, that have no belief system at all, is you find a belief system. And that's a lot of these people that call themselves atheists, or they've subscribed to the religion of woke. You know, their God is equity and inclusiveness. Their God is this ideology that they think that you have to subscribe to. And that's why it's spooky. But I think as time rolls on, people are going to understand the need to have some sort of divine structure to things, some sort of belief in the sanctity of love and of truth. And a lot of that comes from religion. A lot of people's moral compass and the guidelines that they've used to follow to live a just and righteous life has come from religion. And unfortunately, a lot of very intelligent people, they dismiss all of the positive aspects of religion because they think that the stories are mere superstitious fairy tales, that, you know, they have no place in this modern world, and, you know, we're inherently good and your ethics are based on your old moral compass and we all have one. And that's not necessarily true. We need Jesus. I think for real. Like, if he came back now, it'd be great. Like, Jesus, if you're thinking about coming back.
Right now?
Now's a good time.
Yeah, pretty soon, yeah.
Oh, Rogan, now's a good time, Jesus. I mean, come on back. If you're coming back, how about now? How about now? So, isn't this interesting that Joe Rogan is coming to this conclusion that now he's talking about Paideia. He's talking about the culture. He's talking about environment. You know, he says we're to this point where now woke has become the religion. You know, they say that they are anti-religion or they don't want anything to do with God, but woke now has become the religion, and DEI is their God. Diversity becomes their God. Equity and inclusion now becomes their God. That's what their critical race theory, that becomes their God. I mean, this is what they're after. But Rogan says, you know, we need to get to a point where there is some divine structure. He uses that phrase, divine structure. There's got to be it where he says, we've got to get back to a belief in love and in truth. And he said, this happens through religion. Morality happens through religion. Truth, understanding truth, happens through religion. It is the, the Greeks, Aristotle, Plato, Socrates, they were exploring truth. They wanted to strive for truth, and they did it separate from religion. But yet Plato talks about God quite a bit. Now, it's maybe not the Christian God, obviously, it's not Christ. Plato was, 300 years before Christ. But Plato and Socrates and Aristotle are living in this time where they're exploring truth. And it's a time that, in terms of Christianity and Judaism, it's what we call the silent years. Because God is not speaking to his prophets. You know, if you consider the Old Testament, and God spoke to his prophets, The last prophet he spoke to was Malachi, and this was about 400 years before the birth of Christ. So in Christianity, we have what we refer to as this 400 years of silence, where we say God isn't speaking. Interestingly enough, this is the same time period in which Socrates is alive, Plato's alive, Aristotle's alive, and these guys are exploring truth. They are interested in finding and discovering truth. And frequently, I mean, you know, we've talked about this, where Plato says there is a truth and it's knowable. And we can go after it. There are people in his day that Plato referred to and Socrates referred to as sophists who said the exact opposite. Truth is whatever you want it to be. You know, it's whatever. It's, you know, your truth is different from my truth. And it's, you know, these people were very eloquent in their speech, and they could persuade the audience. And both Plato and Socrates were like, no. I mean, it's the blind leading the blind over here. There is a truth, and the truth is knowable. And so they were on this quest for truth, separate necessarily from religion, but not separate from God. And it's just intriguing to me that this is taking place in what we would refer to as the silent years. And so I posed this question, was God really silent? Okay, he stopped talking to his chosen people, the Jews. I mean, he said, all right, there was no communication with the Jewish prophets anymore. But yet, did he visit the Greeks, is my question. Was he, was there a candle lit in the heart of Socrates and Plato? I mean, there are Christians out there right now that are having a fit. That is sacrilege. Heresy, I tell you, heresy. Why though? Why is not God able to speak to a Greek? Is not God able to perhaps shine some light in the heart of Socrates, in the heart of Plato, in the heart of Aristotle? These men who would form Western thought. I mean, these men right here who would form and shape Western philosophy. This is interesting to me. This is very, very intriguing to me. And so Joe Rogan says that, I kind of got off on that rabbit trail because of this word religion. Rogan is saying that really love and truth is born from religion. It's not a religion of DEI. It's a religion that has a divine structure. This is what Rogan, this was the word he used. He said, we need a divine structure, a divine belief, because this is really where morality comes from. Comes from a belief in the divine, that there is a God and he is directing our hearts and our minds. In his book, Mere Christianity, C.S. Lewis, I think it's chapter 4. And I don't have the book in front of me. I think the chapter is entitled something about Beyond the Law. And he goes on to describe how there is a God and we can know it just because of our own humanity. And I can't spit it back out to you. I mean, I would just have to open up the book and read it to you verbatim, but it is so powerful. If you just, I mean, you can buy Mere Christianity. It's pretty cheap. You can go to Amazon or wherever and just go to chapter 4. I'm pretty sure it's chapter 4. I mean, obviously you're going to want to read them all. But each chapter was part of a lecture series that he did on the radio for the BBC during World War II. So it's not where he sat down and he wrote this book. The book is based upon, talks that he was giving on the air. And then he's kind of, reformed the talks for publication purposes. But, oh, man, talk about powerful. And talk about how we know there's a God just because of who we are. It's just something else. And this is kind of what Rogan is talking about. And Rogan says intelligent people dismiss this. They dismiss religion. It's just a bunch of stories and fairy tales. But it's not. This desire is ingrained in us. It's in our hearts. It's in our minds. It's part of us. We are created beings. Oh, here I go. I'm going down this rabbit trail. There is a creator. You were created in his image. Oh, Dean, that's just your belief. Well, I mean, it is, but I mean, just read chapter 4 of Mere Christianity and you're going to start questioning. If you don't believe it, you're going to have some questions. And then, Rogan ends his little spiel here with, we need Jesus. He says, we're not ethically good on our own. We need Jesus. And this is, we're talking about this whole understanding that it's a culture that instructs. It's a culture that teaches. And the Greeks knew it. They called it paideia. It's not just education and for the sake of education. It's a particular mode of education, and it's one that's done by the community, writ large, as it were. There is, people are teaching your children, and you don't even know who they are. They are entertainers, musicians, actors. They have more influence in the lives of your children, and you don't even know who they are. There are friends at school that have influence in your children. You have no idea who they are. You might have some neighbor kids down the street that are influencing your kids, and you might realize that, and you might think, how can I, you know, what can I do? How can I interject? You know, can I, you know, what needs to happen here? Because culture is a master teacher, whether we like it or not. It's a master teacher. And in my opinion, this is what parents are looking for when they're fleeing the public school. And they're looking for a school in which to put their children. This is what they want. They want a culture. Now they'll say, well, I want, you know, reading, math, and writing. And yeah, they want all that. But they want their children in an environment where they're going to grow and they're going to be able to grow and learn the good things. And that's what Rogan's talking about here, the good things. He's talking about love and truth and morality. And these things happen with a foundation of religion. And it doesn't matter what you call your religion. Right now, the religion of the day is DEI. It's CRT. It's this gender ideology. It's these political hot points, these hot buttons, these hot topics that have become the religion of the day. And, you know, what a classical education does is it goes back to foundational truths, not truths built on lies, not truths built on shifting sand. It goes back to foundational truths. There is a God. We were created. There is a morality. These truths are there, they're real, and what Plato said is they're knowable. And that's what we need to be striving for. That's what we need to be aspiring to. That's what we need to be going after, is these foundational truths. What Don Mayer and I said last week is a kingdom education. We need Christ back into the school building. We need Christ back into the education. We need Christ back into the culture, to the paideia, because that's where the true instruction is. All right, I'd like to dive a little bit more into this report from Acadia. Is that what it is? It's the market analysis from Acadia Education, I think. Yeah, Arcadia. I'm sorry, Arcadia Education. We'll dive back into this on the other side. You're listening to The Dean's List on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
When God, through his grace and mercy, gave us free will, the will of the people was to live freely. To that end, we fight for the liberty of all at a time when global tyranny threatens us as never before in mankind's history. This vision is manifest at AmericaOutLoud.news, a site for all who cherish free will and freedom. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. Be a part of a revolutionary new healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interests of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
Welcome back to The Dean's List. I'm Dean Bowen. You are listening to America Out Loud Talk Radio. Now, before I dive into this report, into the details of this report, I hear the bell ringing, and I just need to go to history class. Can we just do it just for a second? I mean, let's just take a couple of minutes and let's dive into history class, because today's the anniversary of the Boston Massacre. Bum, bum, bum. Now, the Boston Massacre is one of those instrumental moments It happened in 1770, today, March 5th. So it happened definitely a few years before the war started in earnest, but it's instrumental, it's pivotal. Boston at this time seethed with resentment in 1770. By the way, I'm drawing this from the American Patriots Almanac. London had imposed taxes on the colonists, even though they had no voice in Parliament. And the king had sent troops to Boston to keep an eye on the unruly Americans. How would you feel, by the way, if you did not have a voice in Washington, D.C., and Joe Biden sent in his federal thugs to keep an eye on you, and you had no representation? I mean, you would feel this way. There would be some resentment brewing. It's in our blood, and it's in our nature. It's in American DNA to feel this way. On the night of March 5th, 1770, the crowd began to taunt some British guards at the Royal Customs House. They're brandishing clubs. They're calling the guards lobsters. The soldiers fixed bayonets onto their muskets, and the mob responded by pelting them with trash, oyster shells, snowballs. I mean, it's a little unruly. The mob is calling them names and they're throwing things at them. And these British regulars, they're getting a little nervous. They've got their bayonets fixed and they're concerned. With their backs to the customs house, they're feeling hemmed in. The frightened soldiers open fire on the crowd. When the smoke cleared, five colonists lay dead or dying. Now, we call it the Boston Massacre. Five people died. Is that a massacre if five die? I mean, it could be. Could be. I mean, when you hear the word massacre, you think, man, there was a lot. But a massacre could be, also only one, but the way that the one, left us. We called it the Boston Massacre. News of the Boston Massacre raced through the colonies. And it's really because of Paul Revere. Boston's Paul Revere, a silversmith, soon engraved a powerful but exaggerated print that depicted the killings as a slaughter. And Samuel Adams distributed the image as part of his battle cry for American liberty. So it was Samuel Adams and Paul Revere that really got this whole terminology going. It was a massacre, the Boston Massacre, and it just, it spreads. The word Boston Massacre is attached to it. Paul Revere puts this print together that makes it seem like, it's a massacre. Five people died. Anytime that there's loss of life, it's tragic. But they definitely took advantage of the moment and they stirred up this, they riled, I guess, so to speak, just the passions of the people. Interestingly enough, Samuel Adams' cousin, John Adams, was asked to defend the soldiers at trial, a job no one else wanted. Did you know that? Did you know that John Adams took the role of defense attorney for these redcoats who had shot and killed five colonists? Adams took the case, move that aroused a clamor and popular suspicion and prejudice against him. People are like, oh, well, what's up with Adams? Sam, your cousin John is defending these blooming redcoats? What is he, a traitor? Yeah, and so, John Adams is starting to be looked at here in a negative light. However, Adams argued that the unruly colonists had provoked the soldiers and that hanging the redcoats would disgrace Massachusetts' name in history. The jury found 6 of 8 accused soldiers not guilty and convicted 2 of manslaughter, for which, as punishment, they were branded on their thumbs. John Adams' show of fairness in the trial eventually won him much respect. He later called it one of the best pieces of service I ever rendered to my country. The Boston Massacre. It was a pivotal moment, and John Adams stood up and he said, "Hey, we need to call it like it is. The crowd plays a role here. I mean, they're at fault." They shouldn't have been, you know, pelting the British soldiers with snowballs and oyster shells and various trash. Interesting. Just, it's an interesting piece of history. And just in case your kids aren't getting that history today, we're going to give it to you here. All right, history class is over. Let's dive into this market analysis a little bit. I'm not going to get too much into the weeds. I certainly don't want it to become boring. So we're going to keep it lively and active, but it's interesting. It interests me anyway. It might not interest you. And if it doesn't, I apologize. I'm sorry that you're not interested in good things. I mean, you know, what can I tell you? All right. So the analysis begins this way. In March 2023, Kevin Mankin published a piece in the 74, which we've referred to the 74 here quite a bit. The piece is entitled, quote, "Amid the Pandemic, a Classical Education Boom. What if the next big school trend is 2,500 years old?" And I love that title. I do. I love it. What if the next school trend is 2,500 years old? And it is, it's a complaint of the left. That's just a dusty old book. That's all. You got to blow the dust off the cover of that book. I mean, what are you going to learn from these old people anyway? You know, Newsom, when he was going after, I think it might have been Temecula Valley. I think it was, because Temecula Valley did not want to use the government-ordered history and civics texts. And, you know, they wanted to use a different text. And Newsom was saying, oh, these guys are using books that are 20 years old. They need to get with the times. They need to use current books. And I'm like, that's not old enough. 20 years old is not old enough. Let's go. How about 2,500 years old? Let's blow the dust off these bad boys. And so I love the title of this article. What if the next big school trend is 2,500 years old? All right, the piece continues. Bold headlines like Mankin's assert terms like Renaissance, resurgence, and movement to characterize what is happening in American classical education. All right, it's a renaissance, it's a resurgence, it's a movement. All right, that's all true. The obvious question is this. Are these claims warranted, or the grandiose dream of a few ideological champions? Well, I would say it's both. I don't think it has to be exclusively one or the other. I think the claims are warranted. And I think they are the grandiose dreams of some ideological champions. And I think they're going to become the grandiose dreams of many more than just a few ideological champions. I think they're the dreams of parents. Parents want, and I've been talking about this for the first two segments, this is what parents want. They want a different culture. They want something different than what they're receiving. So I think the claims are warranted, and I think they're warranted because people want it. All right, and then the analysis goes into an operating definition of classical education, and I like it. I like their definition. They just don't throw out words and just kind of leave it to the audience to wonder, what in the world does this mean? They do a decent job of diving into it. They say classical institutions, while distinct, share fundamental philosophical and anthropological principles that influence their curriculum, pedagogy, and culture. There it is. There's the word. All right. So while classical schools are distinct, they share this fundamental philosophy. And this fundamental philosophy influences their curriculum, their pedagogy, or the education, how they deliver that curriculum, and the culture. The arena that the curriculum is delivered in, it, you know, the culture of the school, they all classical schools kind of have this thing in common. They kind of share this fundamental philosophy of what their curriculum is, what their pedagogy is, or how they're going to deliver it, and the culture in which they're delivering it. Such institutions share the aim to cultivate individuals of virtue, who can think, speak, and write with clarity and are grounded in the Western intellectual and moral tradition and perceive the world as an orderly and comprehensible reality. I mean, that's a mouthful, but it's the truth. This is what classical education striving for. It's what we want. And it's what we aim to cultivate in our students. Cultivate, that word right there. Again, it sounds like culture. It's coming from the same root. This is what we want to bring them up in. We want to bring up our students in an arena of virtue that allows them to think, speak, and write clearly. That grounds them in Western intellectual and moral tradition, intellectual and moral thought. So they perceive the world as this orderly, comprehensible reality, not just something that happenstance, that just, there was this explosion and all of a sudden we're here. It's amazing. I mean, it's like magic. To me, it takes more faith to believe that we just randomly exploded here than it does to believe that there is a creator who has designed this thing with some intelligent thought, and there's purpose behind it, and there's purpose in our lives. This is the heart of a classical education. And I ask you, why wouldn't you want this for your kids? Why wouldn't you want a classical education for your kids? And the answer is, you do want it. You absolutely want it. And this, whether parents realize it or not, this is the impetus for the growth in classical education. And this, what the market analysis refers to as a movement. I mean, this is the impetus right here. We want something more. We want something that's rich, that's meaningful, that's lasting. There is a truth, and we can know it. This is what we want for our kids. Classical educators are inspired by deep dedication to scholastic rigor and the ethical development of their students. Who wouldn't want this? Collectively, they endeavor to perpetuate a venerable tradition rooted in the civilizations of Athens, Jerusalem, and Rome. All right, it just, that's the foundational history of it. All right, the market analysis goes into the benefits. It says, after conducting extensive research, it is evident that classical education is well positioned to have an outsized impact on American education in grades preschool through 12. An outsized impact. I just like their choice of language. Classical education is well positioned to have an outsized impact. We are positioned, those of us that are part of the classical movement, we are positioned to make a change in education. We're not positioned to do it in the public schools. Now, some are. If you take Hillsdale, for example, they're not a classical Christian movement. They're a classical movement because they're happening within the charter school, framework, the charter school world, so to speak. It's still a public school realm. So unfortunately, religion can't be a part of it. While it is, religion is, all right, I'm going to be careful for a second. Let's go back to my previous statement. Religion can't be there in the schools, all right? It is in some form in another different type of religion. I guess what Rogan referred to. But the Hillsdale charter schools and other classical charter schools that maybe are not a part of Hillsdale. We have classical schools in Michigan that are not necessarily a part of the Hillsdale umbrella, but they're still classical schools. I got a call from someone the other day telling me that there was, there's some charter schools in the Detroit area that they're asking if I would be involved in helping them transition to a classical model. That was their, there's charter schools here that want to become classical. This whole idea of classical is growing. It's gaining steam. And we're positioned, whether you're a classical charter school, a charter school that wants to become classical, or you're a classical Christian school, or a Christian school that wants to become classical. This movement is growing, and we're positioned, according to the article, according to the market analysis, we're positioned to have an outsized impact on American education in K-12. All right, they get into the 9 primary benefits. And you know what? I am up against it. I really am. I'm not going to have time to dive into these 9 primary benefits here. We'll do it. Maybe we'll save this for tomorrow. Let's do this. Let's have part 2 tomorrow. All right. The classical education movement, part 2. Let's save that for tomorrow. I want to dive into a little bit more of this market analysis, and I want to give it the time that it deserves. So we will do that. Listen, it's this, the classical movement is organic. It's growing organically. And it's growing simultaneously while parents are exiting public schools. I mean, the whole public school exodus is becoming, you know, parents want to homeschool. The homeschool movement is growing. Classical schools are growing because parents realize we've been missing out on a rich pedagogy. We've been missing out on a rich educational tradition. And we want that pedagogy and that rich tradition to be rooted in this in a different culture, paideia, as the Greeks would say. And you know, the Greeks believed that paideia did the instructing. That's how that was part of what of the educational direction that the kids were in, that the young people were in. And we agree with that. We know that that's true. We know that that culture does the teaching. And this is what makes the classical movement so organic and so massive. It's got some steam behind it. If you want to learn more, you can visit my school. You can visit our website, waterbrookca.org. I think actually the website's down right now. So if you're going to go visit it right now, I mean, we're working on getting it back up. We're having some issues. You know, you can learn a little bit about classical education. All right. We'll dive more into this tomorrow. That's all the time we have for today, America. Thank you for joining me. Encourage your friends and family to get on the Dean's List. Let's unite to renovate the age.